Hello and welcome to another weekly teaching from Vineyard Community Church, St. Louis.
To say is that we just finished up our series on Jesus on purpose, where he's taken he shows us his purpose, his mission, where he comes in and he says, "I'm here," and reads out of Isaiah, "I'm here to proclaim the good news to the poor, to proclaim freedom for the prisoners, to bring recover sight for the blind, to set the oppressed free, and then to proclaim the year of the Lord's favor," Bill talked about last week. Now, I want to say last week, personally, it was amazingly good teaching for me. I mean, God shook me up, took me out, and talked to me about things like a prayer. It was great. But I also want to just say is that we understand for some of you, it was a spot in which that when Bill expressed the year of Jubilee and the examples he used and the language he used, it caused you to think, "Oh, I didn't know our church was going political." And I just want to say, so the question was like, what does that look like? And so as I thought about that today, I just want to say a couple things about that. Is that, you know, the question is like, "Oh man, are you guys starting to attach yourself politically to parties?" I'm just saying, no, we are not, okay? Just make sure you're clear on all that. And in that spot is, Bill, if we had do-overs, we use different examples for trying to give you the feel of the radical nature of Jubilee, and we probably would look at that, but we don't have do-overs, so we just make a few comments on Sunday. So a couple things I'd say about this. We want to be a church that is centered around Jesus, the gospel, and the kingdom of God, putting it first above all else, seeking that. And the place is, we understand and we know that we'll always be a church, our church and the Big C Church, that will have people among it who all love Jesus who will have different political views. And we understand that. And so I say that because, you know, for me, what I've recognized before is that, you know, unity is never based on sameness. It's based on coming to Jesus and being under his kingdom. And there's great diversity. There was great diversity among the disciples. There's great diversity among churches. And that is what we understand as normal. So I say that in recognizing that, for me, one thing I would say is that, that I like about our church is real heart-to-heart conversations, right? This real thing that we have, I love that. Sometimes I love that, and sometimes I don't. But most of the time I love that. But what I love about heart-to-heart conversations is that there's something really cool in that, because I don't know how, I could probably list lots of the people just even in this room where I've had these really deep, real heart-to-heart conversations. And what you've said, I listen to it, it kind of stirs me up, and I think, gosh, and God just brings this truth to me, right? And I would call that, you've provoked me in a good way, right? And I will say that also, I've had conversations where I'm with somebody, and they're bringing me a really good truth, but they say it in a way that they don't really understand where I'm coming from, and it provokes me in a way that's not so easy. And I find it hard to receive that truth, right? And I've had other times, not anybody in this room, nobody online, nobody in the world, but maybe have come to me and said things that were just wrong in a really harsh way, and they've been provoked, right? And I say that because in my old age, okay, and especially after being married for over 41 years, I've learned a couple things about when you get provoked. Is that this is the time, regardless of why you're provoked, this is the time God always comes in on, every time. But it's hard, but it's so good. Some of my best changes in my life have been being provoked in ways that weren't perfect, right? And so I would say that. So if last week's teaching was really provoking in the great way, or any other way, what I just want to say as your pastor is, go to God and say, what's happening here? Help me understand. What are you asking? What are you showing me? And he's always amazingly good about using that for something good, even if it started out in a bad spot. Make sense? Okay, that's sermon number one. You ready to go to sermon number two? All right. Well, we're going to actually, we ended our last series. We're starting another series, still Jesus for Life, but we're calling it Jesus Lifted Up. Have you noticed that term Jesus uses a lot? I must be lifted up. And when he talks about it, especially in John, he talks about it a lot. He's referring back to Numbers 21, where if you remember, the Israelites were under God's punishment, and they had, which is a pretty tough punishment. Snakes were biting them. Okay, it's a long story. But anyway, but the thing about it is, they had already been bitten by snakes, and they're venomous snakes, and they're going to die. But Moses had him to put together this bronze serpent, and they put it up on a pole, and it says in the scriptures, Moses made this bronze snake and put it on a pole. Then when anyone that was bitten by the snake looked at the bronze snake, they lived, right? And so when Jesus begins talking about being lifted up, this is what he keeps always connecting it to. In this place, it says, in John 3, it says, just as Moses lifted up the snake in the wilderness, the Son of Man will be lifted up. We look in John 8, where it says, Jesus said, when you have lifted the Son of Man up, you will know that I am he, and that I do nothing and don't speak out of any of my own initiative. Everything I say comes from God. In John 12, it says, and I, when I am lifted up on the earth, will draw men to myself, right? Now, he adds on this statement after that. John puts in there, he said this to show the kind of death he was going to die. Now, John wrote that later, and he understood it. But when he experienced Jesus saying this early, I don't think John could figure out what in the world he was talking about. I think he was stumped by it, right? And so as we look at this, we have to understand that the disciples, it's interesting, because we're looking at it from looking back on it. They're looking at it in the middle of these situations. They're not being able to wrap their mind around who Jesus is. And so they're thinking, what does he mean, lifted up? And is that a glorious thing? What does that mean? And so then we go a little bit further, and we're going to talk today. And what we're going to do in these particular times is we're going to talk a lot about this place of how Jesus went from the point of arrest all the way to the resurrection. And so in these 5 weeks that are coming up, the fifth week would be Easter. And Easter will actually, just so you know, a little secret, we have two services on Easter, 9 and 11. And so we want anybody can come, bring their family. We got room for you. And so we'll give you more details on as we go. So the thing about this is that with Jesus, that he was always, when he talked about this whole thing of being lifted up, it was at a place in which that Jesus would, talks about that, I need to get my act together. Okay. All right. I'm thinking about like 3 billion things going on at the same time. So I'm going to focus here. All right, I'm back. All right. So today we're going to talk about the first stage that Jesus went through, and that was the betrayal and his arrest. Now, this is another one. The disciples thought he keeps talking about being lifted up, but he also talks a lot about what we're going to be talking about the next 5 weeks, starting with his betrayal and arrest. We see him telling the disciples straight out before that people would rise up and betray him. They would say that he'll be delivered in the hands of men. He'll say the Son of Man must suffer many things and be rejected by the elders and the chief priests, the scribes, and be killed. Right? I mean, he's telling them over and over. But yet what you notice is they can't quite take it in. They don't quite understand this is a reality. And so as we move into our first passage, understand their mind's going 1,000 directions. You know, what we start out with is we have this place in which that, you know, Judas has already betrayed Jesus, Even before the Passover, he betrayed Jesus. You understand? Before that even started, he got 30 pieces of silver, about $600 in our kind of buying power, to betray Jesus. And then he goes back to the Passover with Jesus. And what does Jesus say? He explains what his betrayal is going to have. He talks about the wine being representative of his blood being poured out and the bread being broken, right? And we look at this and it's like pretty obvious. But then we see Jesus, even knowing that Judas was going to betray him, washed all the disciples' feet, including Judas. And it's pretty obvious. He almost like does everything but point at him and say, this guy is going to betray me, but I don't think the disciples still could quite take in what was happening. And so as we look at this, to set this up, now the Passover, the Last Supper is taking place. Judas is left. They've now gone out with him to the garden. He's prayed before God and understood what was coming and struggled and said yes to what the will of God was, to drink this cup of suffering. And this is where the story picks up. So what I want you to do is just put yourself into the story, even if it's very familiar to you. When he had finished praying, Jesus left with his disciples and crossed Kidron Valley. On the other side, there was a garden, and he and his disciples went into it. Now Judas, who betrayed him, knew the place because Jesus had often met there with his disciples. So Judas came to the garden, guiding a detachment of soldiers and some officials from the chief priests and the Pharisees, and they were carrying torches, lanterns, and weapons. Now, imagine this. This is a familiar place to disciples. Now, they have been in this place and had the most amazing conversations and teaching where he took them into this remote retreat, spoke to them, and this is a familiar place, this garden. It has fond memories. The difference is now it's dark. And back then, there weren't many streetlights, right? No LED flashlights, no phone lights, nothing. It was dark, dark. Probably the moon was what their light was for this situation. And as we think about this, if you can imagine what this would feel like, you're already pretty undone from all that's taken place. You're already fairly emotionally exhausted from this prayer time. And now you're with Jesus. It's really quiet. It's really dark. And all of a sudden, you start hearing noise. You start hearing people, which is very odd, being in a remote place. And then you start seeing lights flickering, coming closer and closer. What does your heart do? It goes up a notch. What does your blood pressure do? It goes up a notch. What does your anxiety level do? It goes up a notch. This is something that they know enough that this doesn't look good, right? And then, to top it off, Judas is leading the charge. The person who had sat with him in the same place and listened to Jesus. And these people are the most powerful people around. A mixture of elders, high priests, probably some Roman soldiers mixed in there. They had a mob coming and with lots of power, and they were armed. Now look at verse 4. It says, Jesus, knowing all that was going to happen to him, went out and asked them, who is it you want? You know, I love that. The plan was like, we got to be prepared to attack here. And so here's what we'll do. We'll go to a remote place where no one can see us. And we're gonna come on him. And then the signal is Judas is going to kiss him and greet him. And at that point, when they all start to go ballistic or they start running, we grab them, right? And so they have this whole plan figured out, and Jesus comes out and greets them. And he says, who is it you want? And at this point, you know, Judas, the sign was, these other passages, that he would greet him with a kiss. And in one passage in Luke, it says, Jesus said to Judas, are you betraying the Son of Man with a kiss? I mean, he knew exactly what was going to happen. So Jesus asked, what do they want? Who do they want? In verse 5, Jesus of Nazareth, they replied. I am he, said Jesus. And Judas the traitor was standing there with them. And when he said, I am he, they drew back and fell to the ground. And what we see in here is Jesus, he knew what was going on. If you put this into context, he's just flipping on the lights. Like, let's make it clear who you're going for. Let's not run. Let's go towards you. Let's ask you the question. And he's making them state it very clearly as well. And so then we move on in verse 7. It says, again, he asked them, if they got up off the ground, who is it you want? Jesus of Nazareth, they said. Jesus answered, I told you that I am he. If you are looking for me, then let these men go. This happened so the words he had spoken would be fulfilled. I have not lost one of those you gave me, where Jesus spoke and made clear. And then it says, Simon, Peter, who else would you expect, who had a sword, drew it and struck the high priest's servant, cutting off his ear, his right ear. The servant's name was Malchus. Now, Jesus commanded Peter, put your sword away. Shall I not drink the cup the Father has given me? And so, here we have, imagine this scene, is pretty intense and very intense. Man, Elijah's just good for creating the sound effects at the right moment. Put a little echo in my voice, would you too? So if you imagine the intensity of this, and all of a sudden your disciple standing around, you're Peter, and your anxiety and your level, fight or flight, is high, and he's going for a fight, man. He's just like this. And all of a sudden, he's thinking, do we have any power here? And then all of a sudden, we see that Jesus speaks who he is, and the power of that knocks him on the ground. And that verse there, that it speaks that, the same verse that people drop and go on their faces because they're among a holy God and they feel condemned. That's the power it's talking about right there. And so they are experiencing this. And so it's, and the best way to describe this word in the Greek, it's interesting because it's like a bounce off. They go towards and all of a sudden they go, posh, and they go down, right? So now they get back up and Peter is like ramped, right? His adrenaline's flowing through his body. He's kind of forgot this rebuke that he gave Jesus earlier on, saying, this will never happen to you. And then he said, behind me, Satan. He forgot that part. And he's back in that mode. And he takes his sword out and whacks off the ear of this guy. For some of you, make you feel better. There is a gospel that says he healed the ear back. So just so you won't get distracted. All right, so the reality of it is that he chops off the ear. And as we look at this, Jesus' response is, he commands Peter, put your sword away. Shall I not drink the cup the Father has given me? Now, we know right after this from the other Gospels is at that point, everybody ditched. All disciples deserted him at that point. They just took off. Now, so in this passage, there's a lot. I want to just highlight a few verses that stood out to me that I thought could be really helpful, I think, and encouraging. The thing that I see as I look at this, and we'll see this as we go through the next four weeks, is that God's power and will is accomplished through humility, through the humility and the obedience of Jesus. I mean, that's where this power came from. I love it in verse 4. Jesus, knowing all that was going to happen, he went out and said, who do you want? This is really important. Jesus knew what was going to happen. He knew that he'd be betrayed by Judas. He knew that Peter would deny him. He knew he was going to suffer in ways that were extremely, almost beyond bearable. He knew these things. He knew that lifted up means that he'd be lifted up on a cross and brutally murdered. And here's why that's important. This mob did not take the life of Jesus. Jesus gave his life to the mob. Understand? I mean, I love that one verse where he says, hey, you're coming for me, let them go, because he shows the love of his disciples, his protective nature of the disciples. This is about me, and let them go, right? Because he loves it. So like, that's an amazing love. In the middle of all that, he's thinking of them, not himself. But quite honestly, the most amazing thing is what he was doing was for the mob that was after him. What he was doing was for those who were carrying weapons wanting to kill him. What he was doing was for the mob who started yelling, crucify him, crucify him. What he was doing was for those who mocked him while on the cross, spit on him, and despised him. And what that means to us is he really loves us. And he doesn't love us later when we get cleaned up. He loves us in the deepest part of our sin that we're caught in. As we talked about last week, Romans, you see, just at the right time, when you're still powerless, Christ died for the ungodly. Very rarely will anyone die for a righteous person, though a good person sometimes might possibly dare to die. But God demonstrates his own love for us in this. While we were sinners, Christ died for us. This is later. While we were enemies, we were reconciled to him through the death of his son. Now, I just want to say, anybody here or anybody online who may be considering committing your life, moving towards this Jesus guy we're talking about, right? This is such good news. Because we often find ourselves being aware of the things we keep trying to change and we keep messing up on. We try and we try and we realize, I got to quit. We even know, we may not call it sin, the Bible calls it sin, but maybe I just keep doing these things that are destructive over and over again. I can't seem to stop myself. I just keep doing that. And we keep thinking, I need to get to God. And some of us are just not really interested in that, but we still know we need that. And we find ourselves feeling what? Powerless. Just at the right time. When we in our most evil place, in our most place that we were pulling away from God, God loved us, right? And it's really true with us as followers of Jesus, right? Even when we, maybe some of us got to a spot that we just feel like we've gotten distanced away from God, and maybe we've got tied into things that just kind of have a hook in us. The same applies. In the worst spot, in the darkest place that you find yourself, God's love increases the greatest. That's just who he is. And it's not by you shaping up. It's just by you receiving something you don't deserve because he paid this price for us. Now, but probably my favorite verse is in verse 6. And I'll kind of mix 6 and 11 together. Where there's this point in which that Jesus is just there, and they start coming around him, and all of a sudden, he has this authority that knocks him on the ground as he's sitting and standing there, right? His authority is pretty strong. And what we see in this is that, and then Jesus commands Peter. Then Peter, later on, takes his sword out and he says, no, stop it. I love this because what we see is we see that Jesus was fully under the authority and expressing the authority of God at this moment, right? And I think sometimes we look at this scene and by natural count, we look at the scene and say, it looks like evil's winning at this moment, right? This mob is, I mean, it's about the ugliest scene you can imagine, being betrayed. It's like, this is bad. There's no way you look at this and say, oh, it looks like everything's going well with Jesus' followers now. It looks bad, and it's evil, and it's ugly, and it's dark, and it looks like evil is moving and taking ground. But what I love about verse 6, it's like, not at all. See, sometimes we have this kind of imagery of a boxing match. When we get into the Passion, we start thinking about this place that moves up to the place of the cross, and it's like, oh, Jesus is on the ropes, and the evil's starting to beat him, but he's coming back, and you know, it's just this kind of back and forth, and then he's beat up, and he's sad, and then he's come, and he's alive, he rose from the dead. That's not the way it is. Jesus knew everything that was going on, and when this happened, his authority, he was operating in the authority of Jesus. Jesus was operating the authority of God at this moment. And I love it because Peter, he had the perspective of things are going to hell here. We got to intervene. Get my sword out. And he commanded Peter, I like that word, put your sword back. Right? In fact, I love it in Matthew. Here's what he says in Matthew. Peter, your sword, place it back. Do you think I cannot call on my Father and he will at once put at my disposal more than 12 legions of angels? But how then would the scriptures be fulfilled that say that it must happen this way? And to know that, it shows me this place of how the kingdom of God is so different. The kingdom of God is advancing as this mob is doing all these evil things. More power is happening than it's ever happened before, and it looks horrible on the outside. We don't advance the kingdom of God by raising ourselves up and taking charge and fighting the mob and hating those who hate us. That just doesn't work. We advance the kingdom of God just like Jesus did, as his followers who are to be like him. We advance it by humbling ourselves and being obedient and yielding ourselves and saying, God, I want your will over my own. We advance the kingdom by not being self-focused or looking for our own interests, but looking and saying, what are the interests of the mob? What are the interests of my disciples? What are the interests of the people who are around me? Now, here's the thing. This last year has been a mess. Let's just get honest with us here. I'm not saying we haven't done good with it. I'm just saying it is a mess. Everything went directions I couldn't even imagine going, right? And by the natural view is it's destroying the church. Right? There's statistics showing it's going to destroy the church. And this year has shaken me up. Has this year shaken you up? Oh my gosh. I'm shaken up. I think I'm done being shaken up, and something else shakes me up, and I'm undone again. I am provoked over and over in this time. I'm just constantly shaken up. Things are going on that I can't understand. I can't even figure out what to do with them. But here's what I'm saying. I like this scene. It's a mess. It is so bad in the natural in this garden. And yet, God is doing something big that no one can see. And I'm telling you, and I may be wrong, I believe God is doing something in His church, our church and the church, that is going to, we're going to look back on saying, that was so amazing. But right now, we're in the mess. And our natural eyes can't see it. I've never had a time that I've had to go to God, Jesus, so much to get His perspective, because mine has taken me to the wrong spot. And His perspective is very different than mine. But when I get it, I can see hope again. So, as I look at this scene, really what it is what encourages me, and we'll see this all the way through as we go towards Easter, is that the way the kingdom advances is much simpler, but sometimes more difficult than we expect, but it has tremendous power. So I'm just going to read a verse in closing, and take in this verse. If you want to close your eyes, you can, or just listen to whatever. I'm not going to put it on the screen. And it's a very familiar verse, but understand what this is saying. It's basically Paul being able to say, this is the heart of who Jesus is and how He lives and how He brought what He brought. Now I want you, as His church, to have exactly the same attitude on how you bring the kingdom to this world and how you bring His will to this world. Make my joy complete, being like-minded, having the same love, being one in the Spirit, of one mind. Do nothing out of selfish ambition or vain conceit. Rather, in humility, value others above yourselves, not looking to your own interests, but each of you to the interests of others. In your relationships with one another, have the same mindset as Jesus Christ, who, being in the very nature God, did not consider equality with God something to be used to His own advantage. Rather, He made Himself nothing. By taking the very nature of a servant and being made in human likeness and being found in the appearance of man, He humbled Himself and becoming obedient to death, even death on a cross. What I want to invite you to this week and today is just recognize and help, pray that God can show you and reveal what He's doing. But recognize that God's working His plan even when it feels like evil is winning. He is. Trust Jesus. Don't take things in your own hands. Do you guys know what I mean by that? That's different for other people how they do that. Sometimes people take things in their own hand by disappearing and shut themselves off. Some people flight, and some people fight. That's taking it into your own hands, saying, this isn't going well, I got to take control. Don't do that. But go to God, humble yourself, invite His will, invite His kingdom. And then moving others towards Jesus, humble yourself, put others' interests above your own. Pray for His will to be done and for His kingdom to come. All right.